Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment. Trying to make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin sale bro.
Show,
they got me started, lying hearted, I'm the new Mufasa. And I'm all about Umoja, first in Gruz Usaba. Let's bring back the black families, we need our father. Single mama, son and daughter, that's root of the problem. Wise up, we wise up, unity so powerful. Black banks, black schools, black owned, black power moves. You telling lies, if you think this shit gon' be televised. Black power, be scared guys, they be standing there like they paralyzed, huh? We say fuck the system, cause we above the system. We keep ARs and pistols, shotguns that's worth the crystal. But that's for self-defense, make sure we have no issues. Be sure to leave it at the door if you have it with you. This for them freedom fighters, that lost their freedom. Until they freedom, we screaming carpe diem. This for the general, King Khalid Muhammad. We gon' make your day a holiday, I fucking promise. Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, tryna make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin sale bro.
RBG, 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 RBG. My sisters, my brothers, the council, the elders, shit, that's really all I need. We suited, we booted, don't do it, you stupid, we head to the armory. Black woman and goddess, regardless, my heart just don't fuck with misogyny. Bullshit, I don't tolerate it. Melanated, so you gotta hate it. Barack fucked up another conversation. Trump finna get inaugurated, damn. Unify or die, NBPP.org.
First and foremost, the new Black Panther Party, no other Black Panther Party, we are not violent. We are for self-defense and self-determination. The most violent group in this country are the police. What is taking place by the police department to black people across this country is ethnic cleansing and genocide. It has escalated since the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2008. We have a people who are only 13% of the population, yet we make up 80% of the prisons. We have 50% unemployment rate in the black community, and it's actually even more than that because they're not counting our people that are in the prison. The 13th Amendment says you cannot be made a slave or indentured servant unless you commit a crime. The 14th Amendment forced our people to be subjects of this government. We never had any say in that. We need our own nation.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, all praise is due to Allah, the Lord of all the worlds. We turned up just a little bit. We forever thank Almighty God for coming, as it was written and prophesied that he would come to seek and to save that which was lost. And we can find no other people fitting the description of the lost brother, the lost sister, or the lost sheep, except we, the 50 million or more, mentally and spiritually dead, black men and black women here in the hells of North America. And so we thank him for coming and raising up his messenger and his Messiah to the black man and black woman, again here in the hells of North America. I speak of none other than the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And I thank the two of them for the man who is responsible for what I am and what I am becoming. and the man who is largely responsible for my spiritual rites of passage, and who is my mentor and teacher. I speak of none other than my spiritual father, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. In their names, I greet you here in Queens at the African Poetry Theater, where culture is the byword and culture is used as a weapon. And to Brother John Watusi and to others who are responsible for the programming and the enlightenment and the supreme wisdom that comes out of this house, I am deeply honored, as I have stated, to have this opportunity to speak with you on this rainy night on the subject that has been given to me, which I think is a very good subject. And that subject that was given to me is police brutality. Who polices the police? It's a very serious subject, and so naturally my response has to be a very serious response. There are those who speak of police review boards, and there are many police review boards throughout North America. There are many police review boards that allegedly are set up to monitor the activity of the policing agencies. And certainly some good has come out of police review boards, but I do not believe that police review boards can deal with the high level of police brutality in the black community. Of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. If we know what happened yesterday, then we can intelligently discuss police brutality today, because today is built on yesterday, and tomorrow indeed is built on today. The very coming into being and existence of the white man. Not too many people want to say the white man anymore. Not too many people even say the words white man together. And very few from a rostrum or a podium or a TV talk show or anywhere who will straight up call the white man the devil in 1997. So let's get that straight before I even get started. The white man is not a devil, but the devil. He is wicked by nature. He's the number one murderer, the number one robber, the number one raper, the number one lyncher, the number one enslaver, the number one colonizer. He is the chief shedder of blood on the face of the planet Earth, and no one has come close even to equaling the shedding of blood of the white man. As I started to say, his very existence is owed to the shedding of blood of the black man and black woman. There would be no white race if it were not for the genetic engineering, the grafting, the birth control, and the special process by which the white man came into existence, which required, again, the very shedding of blood of the black man and black woman. And so the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad has taught us that the circumstances surrounding the origin of a thing into the world determines the very nature of that thing. It codes that thing. It marks that thing. And that thing cannot help but do according to its coded nature. And if it is your bloodshed, and it is, that brought the white man into existence, then it must be your and my bloodshed that will keep him in power and in control. And so white supremacy and global white domination and rabid racism that runs rampant throughout the face of the planet Earth is based on the murder of the black man and black woman, but black man first. The black man is public enemy number one. Public enemy number one. Oh, he does not spare the black woman. For the black woman is spotted and speckled with all of the shades of color, of the color spectrum. Number one, she is all of the colors because she is the original woman. And out of her comes the black, the brown, the red, the yellow, and yes, out of her comes the white. But she is spotted and speckled today in another sense because of the rape of our great-great-grandmothers and our great-great-great-grandma. I'm not going to get into that. Hell, all of them were great. Straight on down the line, the raping of the black woman. So she has not been spared. But again, I say, public enemy number one is the black man. Why is the black man public enemy number one of the white man? The black man is public enemy number one when we study police brutality and global white supremacy. He is number one because, as our great psychiatrists and psychologists such as Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, such as Dr. Richard King, such as Dr. Naeem Akbar, such as Dr. Cedric X. Clark, and others have pointed out to us, Dr. Patricia Nonar Kosawa Sekmet, and others of our psychologists and psychiatrists, Dr. Merira Bridges, and others, as they have pointed out to us, the black man is public enemy number one because the world is a white male-dominated world. It is a white male-dominated world. And being a white male-dominated world, then he fears the number one threat to his global rule and his reign of white supremacy. And his number one threat is the black man. And so he fears that the black man will one day wake up. And if the black man, and when the black man one day wakes up, then there is the end to the white man's white supremacy. I'd like to, before I get into the body of my lecture, read a poem for you. I normally don't read poems, but this one is just so good. I got to read this one. You want to hear a poem at the African Poetry Theater? Here where culture is a weapon. All right? The poem is called, the poem is by Taimbe Jess. And the poem is, "When niggers love revolution like they love the bulls. When niggers love revolution like they love the bulls, youth will wear red, black, and green patches over the emblems on their starter jackets. When niggers love revolution like they love the bulls, brothers will gather regularly at barbershops and corner stops to discuss George Jackson and to discuss the handbook of revolutionary warfare and people's war before they go home to take care of their children each night. When niggers love revolution like they love the bulls, playground basketball courts will become paramilitary training grounds where we learn to shoot guns at the enemy and not baskets for bets. When niggers love revolution like they love the bulls, we will spend hours and hours watching our children grow into soldiers and not basketball players. When niggers love revolution like they love the bulls, we will know CIA stats, FBI stats, infant mortality stats, police brutality stats, political prisoners and prisoners of war, and literacy training techniques like we know Paxson's shoe size or Shaq's shoe size or the way we know Rodman or Pippen's rebounds or Grant's salary and all the intimate details of Michael's last gambling spree. When niggers love revolution like they love the bulls, you will be able to ask any youth on the street, who is Sundiata Okoli? Who is Assata Shakur? Who is Sekou Odinga? Who is Rochelle McGee and Jonathan Jackson? You will be able to ask, who is Matula Shakur? Who is Queen Mother Moore? And they will be able to tell you without skipping a beat. When niggers love revolution like they love the bulls, you will go on to ask them about Michael Jordan, and they will say, school. When niggas love revolution like they love the Bulls, masses of us will go down to tear up a Carolina coroner and his office to find out what really happened to James Jordan instead of waiting on the word of newspapers and sheriff's offices. When niggas love revolution like they love the Bulls, we will show up in Washington, D.C. with the Million Man March, with our God and with our guns. When niggas love revolution like they love the Bulls, they will start to seriously wonder why one Negro putting a brown ball through a white net makes more mint money in one season than they will make in an entire lifetime, and do something about it. When niggas love revolution like they love the Bulls, you will see Phil Jackson running up and down an empty court minutes before game time screaming, "Where are my niggas? Where are my niggas? Where are my niggas?" as the niggas leave the stadium to go build liberation schools in their community. When niggas love revolution like they love the Bulls, all niggas will refuse to shoot ball with the president, with or without their dashikis on. When niggas love revolution like they love the Bulls, will become associated with the sound that CIA agents, snitches, rats, and agent provocateurs who join our organizations and work against the legitimate aspirations of our people who yearn to breathe free, drug dealers and others will make when they are thrown gracefully face first into open manholes. Whoosh. When niggas love revolution like they love the Bulls, Nike will no longer be able to sell $160 basketball shoes in the black community, because we would rather spend the money on liberation and revolution. Thank you. When niggas love revolution like they love the Bulls, they would love it. They will love it more than chitlins, more than all my children, more than Jerry Curls, more than permanence, more than Cadillacs and Mercedes-Benz and Rolls-Royces and BMWs, cars. When niggas love revolution like they love the Bulls, when niggas love their family like they love the Bulls, when niggas love their children like they love the Bulls, when niggas love to be free like they love the Bulls, when niggas love struggle like they love the Bulls, when niggas love dignity like they love the Bulls, when niggas love niggas like they love the Bulls, we will become black people and all the bullshit will hit the fan. Understanding the very origin and the nature and the coding of the white man, and understanding that his very existence and world control and domination and the maintaining of white supremacy is based on the murder of the black man and woman, then it is no wonder that police brutality is to the level that it is in black communities all over America. The cold-blooded murder of Brother Aswan there in Brooklyn just a few weeks, months ago, shot 20 times, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26 times. Brother Jerry Lee Aiming in Los Angeles, shot 39 times, over 6 feet tall, shot even on his shoulders, which meant, did the cracker get on a stepladder and shoot him on his shoulders, or did they shoot him and shoot him and shoot him down to the ground and keep shooting him even after he was on the ground? You don't have to shoot a damn elephant 39 times to kill an elephant. And Jerry Lee Amy, as always, as all of us are, was the wrong man. Cracker was looking for a robbery suspect. Jerry Lee Amy is playing with his daughter in the front yard. And as they are running across the front yard, the cracker assumes that he is a so-called fugitive of Just Us. And so they shoot him down on his lawn in front of his baby girl. Brother Philip Pinnell would still be alive. In New Jersey, Brother Lewis there in St. Petersburg, Florida, would still be alive as the crackers rolled up on him and claimed that his car lunged forward, that one was on the side and the other one, what kind of fool this is, I don't know. The other cop was supposedly in front of the car looking through the front of the windshield. Common sense would tell a damn fool, you don't have to be a policeman, that you don't stand in front of the vehicle. But they claimed the vehicle lunged forward. They shot him. The policeman was never hit by the vehicle. The vehicle never crashed anywhere into the pole or anywhere on the side. Brother Lewis would still be alive if we understood this dynamic better than we understand it. Our brother in Johnny Gamage in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, who was there in the suburbs of Pittsburgh, and the crackers said that he stepped on his brakes and his brake lights came on too many times. His brake lights were blinking too many times. And so they snatched him from the vehicle, and all of them jumped on top of him and beat him and choked him and choked him until they choked in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Brother Johnny Gamage to death. Sister Eula May Love and the many that are from the New York area, from the New Jersey area, from Chicago, from Los Angeles, from the South, and throughout. All of them, brothers and sisters, victims of police brutality, and we don't even have the time to name all of us killed at the hands of brute beast police. It was former Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall who spoke at Howard Jew University, sometimes called Howard University. And as he spoke there, he said that the Ku Klux Klan, that the white paramilitary right-wing organizations, the Nazis and others, that the Klan no longer just wears white hoods and white sheets, but now the Klan wears blue uniforms, carries a badge or a shield and a legal, quote-unquote, weapon, that the Klan now wears black robes and sits on the judge's bench to rule from the courtroom. And so Thurgood Marshall, having been a Supreme Court justice, too afraid to make bold stands himself, but in a sense like the spook who sat by the door, on his way out, he could begin to give up a little bit of the truth. And right here in New York, we have Judge Bruce Wright. And as we read his book, Black Robes, White Justice, in Black Robes, White Justice, Judge Bruce Wright gives us the inside track on the criminal justice system of the white man. And never call it a criminal justice system unless you put the adjective in front of it, that it is a criminal justice system. In fact, it is the criminal justice system. It is no wonder that there is police brutality, because the white man is a criminal. He's the number one criminal on the face of the planet Earth. Criminals established the criminal justice system of white America. Every law in the penal code system of the state of New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, California, Georgia, no matter where, and the penal code for the federal government of the United Snakes of America. Every law in the penal code book, every law was broken by the white man in order to establish that state, to establish this state, and to establish what he calls the United States of America. Every law. Some of you saw us on Harold Hope. That's what he is. That's a little Ebonics. I can't call him Harold Hoare. Ebonically speaking, he's a Harold Ho. You saw us with Dr. Alvin Poussaint. How many saw it? Poor Dr. Alvin Poussaint got up and walked off the stage. Didn't want to be on the stage with me. He said, I can't sit here with Khalid Muhammad. He said, Dr. Khalid Muhammad has said some of the worst things and taken some of the most racist and anti-Semitic stances that I have ever heard of before. He went on to say even Minister Farrakhan had to get rid of Khalid Muhammad. In other words, he was saying, damn, if Farrakhan had to get rid of him, you know he must be bad. All praises due to Allah. So Dr. Alvin Poussin of Harvard University, psychiatrist, eminent scholar among us, got up from the podium on national television. Some saw it internationally. We knew a month or two before the program, everybody that was going to be on the program. He knew I was going to be on. I knew he was going to be on. They had the other Negro, what's his name, the prosecutor in the OJ case. Christopher Darden. He was on there. Christopher Darden was there. I brought some Kleenex for him. I didn't get a chance to pass them to him on the program. You remember old Chris Darden, upholding the criminal justice system of white America and supporting white supremacy and cold-blooded police brutality. You remember him that after they lost the case, he stood with Marsha Clark and cried like a baby, just broke down and boo-hooed. Marsha Clark took it like a man. But he broke down and cried like a baby. Why was Christopher Darden crying? He was crying because it was a flashback to the plantation. Every plantation had an old nigga that was a fast nigga. And this nigga, when they were getting ready to whip another nigga, that's not my word, that's their word for us. And if everybody stands up in front of you and dresses it up and tiptoes through the tulips and beats around the bush and dilly-dallies, you'll go right back to sleep because some of you want to go back to sleep. Oh, he's using the N-word. Damn N-word. Why do you use the N-word? Because that's what the cracker calls us every day and night. Texaco is not alone. It's Texaco, Shell, Chevron, Texaco, Amoco, all of the crackers. It wasn't just Avis. Avis Rent-A-Car said they didn't want to rent cars to niggas. Say whatever you do, but just if you can get around it, don't rent the darn car to a nigga. That's what Avis said. I mean, even saw it in the news. Avis said, look, the niggas put their cigarettes out on the seats. Niggas leave chewing gums stuck on the steering wheel. Niggas have a flat, leave a donut on the damn car. They say the niggas just tap all the rental cars. Say, you know, we need their money, but we lose so much. Can you try not to rent to them? Tell them something's wrong with their driver's license, their credit card, anything. Bally, you know, Bally with the shoes and stuff. I don't know what the thing was with them. They were talking about. But to all of the crackers, we're niggas, some to our face, others behind closed doors. That's Tiger Woods. He's called the winner of the Masters, which is supposed to make him a baby, a master. But to the cracker, he's just another fried chicken, collard green-eating nigger. That's all. You might be able to swing a golf stick between your legs and choose the right iron and knock a little white scrawny ball into a hole in black Mother Earth on green grass, which is a game representing global control and white supremacy. That's why they play on the green. And that's why it's a little white ball representing the testicles of the white man. And you must choose the right size iron. They make a big deal over the size of the iron. To knock this little scrawny white ball into a hole in black Mother Earth. But it's a game for control of the turf, of the green, of the land, of the earth. Here comes a baby, 21 years old? 21 years old, and beats all of them potbelly over the hill old peckerwoods who've been playing golf all their life, some of them. So the cracker just got mad. and call him a fried chicken eating, collard green eating little boy. Say the little boy is doing everything right. Those crackers were embarrassed. They just let black people into the masters in the 90s and only have about two. And then he comes in and just takes over and beats them all. But to them, to us, we may be proud that he's a master in the golfing world. But to them, just a fried chicken, collard green eating nigger. Alan Keyes ran for president, wanted to be a Republican. Ain't no difference in the Republican or the Democrat. The political system of the white man will never get us out of this condition. You can run out there and register to vote as much as you want to and brag about how many people you registered to vote. For what? So you registered so many and so many to vote. Will it change the condition of black people? We've been voting ever since the white man allowed us to vote, and we're still in the same condition, if not in a worse condition. And every time you think you voted in a good initiative or a new initiative that is supposed to be for and in our best interest, the white man changes the rules of the game and changes in the twinkling of an eye and turns back the hands of the clock. You thought affirmative action, many thought it was here to stay. You thought food stamps were here to stay. Some of you were big niggas in the community. You had a big roll of food stamps. You be flipping and flashing your food stamps on the rest of the slaves. You had more food stamps than any slave in the community. Peckerwood talking about welfare reform. Democratic president signed it. The Republican constituency behind it. Both Democrat and Republican. But this Negro, Alan Keyes, wanted to be a Republican candidate for president. And they had a debate down there in Atlanta, Georgia. He went down to the debate. Clinton is there, Slick Willie. That's what they call him, Slick Willie, and he is slick. Screwed everything that wasn't screwed down when he was in Arkansas. Had the state troopers sneaking women in, bringing them through the window, through the back door of the state house. Poor Hillary somewhere with the dog and the bird and that ugly little daughter they got. Then he says he used to smoke weed, but he didn't inhale. You know, why not just leave the lie alone? The old folks say if you tell one lie, you're going to have to tell another one. He smoked weed, but he didn't inhale. Huh? This is crazy as it can be. Would you buy a used car from a guy named Slick Willie? He was there. Buchanan was there. The multi-billion dollar Peckerwood with the big ears. Pinocchio's nose grew from lying so much. You got $1 billion, you're doing some lying and serious stealing. And you're white. So his nose is not growing. This cracker's ears are growing. He was at the debate. All these big crackers, Alan Keyes, the Negro, saying he wanted the good old days to come back. Now, I don't know what this nigga was thinking about. But somehow he worked himself up for that. Showed up in Atlanta as the Republican candidate, a Republican candidate to debate. Showed up at the door. They say, huh? He said, I'm Alan Keyes. I'm here for the debate. They say, for what? I'm a candidate for president. I'm here for the debate. They say, nigga, you here for what? What do you have to say, nigga? He said, but I was a candidate for president. I was a Republican. They said, nigga, you better get on away from here. He said, but I have a right to come in here. They said, call the police. They called the police on this nigga, put him in handcuffs, threw the Republican guy, Negro, running for the Republican slot with the other Republicans, in a police squad car and dropped his behind off in one of the worst sections of Atlanta, Georgia, I guess hoping he would get mugged or beat upside the damn head. To other Negroes, he was a candidate for the high office of the presidency of the United States of America. To the crackers at the debate, he was just another nigga. Listen, nigga, you ain't got no business in here. And they didn't even let the nigga come in to use the toilet. Sent his behind away. You had other Negroes say that if they went Republican, they would have the keys to the White House. When it was over, niggas didn't even have the keys to the outhouse. But it makes no difference whether it's Republican or Democrat. And I'm going to say this whether you like it or not, but somebody has to say it. It makes no difference whether it's an independent political party. Democrat, Republican, independent political party, as long as you're playing by the rules of the white man, you still are not going to win. Separation is the best and only solution into a land or territory of your own. You say, well, I'm a black nationalist. How in the hell are you going to be a black nationalist and you ain't thinking about no separation? You can't have a nation unless you separate from your enemy and your oppressor. But nobody wants to talk separation now. You ask them a question about separation and they start tiptoeing and scratching it. Well, you know, that's a last resort, you know. After well, you see, if we can't get along together, well, hell, how much more time do you need to know that we can't get along together? The most honorable Elijah Muhammad said the white man is absolutely disagreeable to get along with in peace. And that no one has been able to get along with him anywhere on the face of the planet Earth. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad didn't say, if we can't work things out with the white man, if we can't get justice from the white man, he said, since we can't get justice from the white man. Since is a foregone conclusion. Since means it's already decided. The matter is decided. It's already determined that we can't get along with this cracker. But many want to tiptoe. You don't want a nation of your own. That's not everybody here. When I say you, I mean us in general. Separation is the only solution. The white man broke every law in the state and federal penal code system in order to establish every state in the United States and to establish the United States itself. His Army, his Navy, his Air Force, his Marine Corps, his Coast Guard, these are national policing agencies. He has national policing agencies, FBI. He has international and global policing agencies, Army, Navy, Air Force, alliances, NORAD, and NATO, and all of this to control the globe like a big white octopus. He has his tentacles stretched out across the globe as a national and international policeman, then state police, then county police, then city police. Huh? And even the boroughs have special police. Then you go to the damn building and the building got some special police. Here's a cracker watching you in the toilet in some of the buildings. He's standing around wondering and checking. I don't know what he's doing. That's another subject for another time. Police everywhere. What's the purpose? To maintain white supremacy. To maintain global white supremacy, to protect what has been stolen from the rest of the world. The police are not our friend. Now, there are black police organizations that are coming up, and some of them are conscious. Some black policemen bucked the whole white police establishment. Conscious black policemen who are tired and sick and tired of being tired, who have consciousness, are beginning to build black policing organizations right in major precincts and some minor precincts all over the country, and it's worrying the white man to death. Conscious black policemen, some of them are actually recruiting other policemen, pulling them to the side, teaching them, giving them tapes, giving them liberation literature, taking them to meetings and rallies and conferences so that that gun that they have on their hip and that shield that they have can be used for us in times of escalated war. Some black policemen are actually preparing for war as we stand here and talk here tonight. The marshals, the U.S. marshals, black marshals, talking of filing a class action suit against the United States Marshals Department. Members, black members of the so-called Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI agents, have filed class action suits against the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Because black policemen are now right in there with them, checking them out every day. Why does the devil keep us apart from his social equality? Let me send a shout out to all the gods in the earth in the house. Peace. Why does the devil keep us apart from his social equality? That's why you got the CIA, the FBI, black CIA, black FBI, black policemen, black marshals, black sheriffs. Some of them now standing up. You got 5 percenters, 5% sheriffs. Everything has a 5%, a 10%, and a 85%. You got a 5% among the policemen coming up conscious, black as they can be, all across the country. And now that they have been in there where the white man is, they have found out how filthy he is, how wicked he is, how evil he is, and all his affairs. And in finding out how filthy, how wicked, and how evil he is in all his affairs, now the white man wants to run them from among them. And so he's now bringing certain pressure to bear against them and forcing them to take him to court. And I say, like Lorraine Hansberry said, who gave us a raisin in the sun and raised the question, what happens to a dream deferred? And ultimately she says, or does it just explode, as she gives us the other options. Lorraine Hansberry, who was nobody's revolutionary. Lorraine Hansberry talked about fighting this cracker by any means necessary. She talked about those who want to use the march to use the march. Those who want to use the ballot to use the ballot. She said those who want to challenge him in court, take him to court, as these black policemen and marshals and sheriffs and others are taking the cracker to court. But she said that there should be others who are armed. Lorraine Hansberry talking, who will shoot from their windows, she said, when these races come into our community. Now that's Lorraine Hansberry. Some of y'all say, what kind of berry was strawberry? Who is that? Lorraine Hansberry. What's that? What's raspberry? Who is Lorraine Raspberry? I said Hansberry. Now what kind of berry is a Hansberry? Go and look up. She's gone on to the realm of the Egun now, to her ancestors. But study about Lorraine Hansberry and look up her work, A Raisin in the Sun, and you will get a feel for her and a feel for her life. And she talked about shooting, and there would be others who would be shooting from their windows when the races would come into our community. I'm almost finished. I don't believe that taking the cracker to court is going to solve it. But I would rather see our brothers who are gaining consciousness on the police force, FBI, CIA, marshals, and sheriffs, and others, take the cracker to court while they organize on another level. But when you take Frank James to court, and Jesse James is the judge, how in the hell do you expect Jesse James to convict Frank James when that's his brother? If Frank James took something from you, and you come to court and tell Jesse that Frank took it from you, all Jesse is concerned with is whether Frank left anything over for him to take. So when you take the white man to court, you're taking the criminal to the criminal, into a criminal justice system set up by crackers, criminals, and Satan himself. I'm almost there. I'm almost there. The Bible says blood will flow in the streets to the horse's bridle. Can you imagine that? A horse's bridle? Blood will flow in the streets to the horse's bridle. Another scripture says, as you have delighted in taking our blood, you will be given your own blood to drink like water. The Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, my spiritual father, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, when we were tight, 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 and close, 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 he used to tell me, as he was teaching me, and he would tell many of us, how when he was sitting with his spiritual father, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, how sometimes he would be riding in the car with the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and white folks would be passing in front of the car at the stoplight, and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad would touch him and say, Brother Lewis, have you ever seen a people in whom there is no good at all? And Minister Farkas said, no, sir, dear apostle. He said, well, there goes one right there. No good in them at all. And he says the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad used to talk about how he would torture the white man, how he would like to take his fingernails off one by one, take his eyeballs out of the socket, what he would do with the skin of the white man, and how he said he would like to cut crackers' throats or cut devils' throats until the blood started rising up to his chin. And the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan told me from his own mouth that the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that as he cut white folks' throats, cut the devil's throats, and the blood rose up, coming up over his head, that he prayed that Allah would give him the strength to just cut one more cracker's throat before the blood rose up over his head. Now, for some of you, this subject may be a little rough. They should have issued you some seat belts when you came in. And if for any reason this cultural center becomes depressurized, an oxygen mask will automatically fall from the ceiling. Please place it firmly over your mouth and nose and breathe freely, and then help the weak one next to you. But everything will be all right. You don't give me a subject on police brutality and expect me to come and tiptoe and just speak on police review boards and speak on how we can find ways to take them to court. And no, what I'm going to tell you tonight in the language that I will tell you tonight, I probably have never said directly, though I have said indirectly and partially directly many times. We must arm ourselves or harm ourselves. We must arm the masses. Are you saying that? Yes, as brother points to his head, we must be armed with supreme wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. We must be armed with our history, our heritage, our culture, our legacy, our God, and the spirit and the power of the God of our ancestors. We must be armed with steel cameras, video cameras, film cameras, so that black people like Dr. Huey P. Newton and brother Bobby Seale and brother Kwame Ture, like the Black Panther Party in the early days, made sure to monitor every time cops stop black people anywhere on the streets or in an alley. You should have your video camera going. You should have your camera taking pictures. You should have your tape recorder on. You should be armed with your tape recorder, your video camera. You should be armed with your steel camera, with your movie camera. You should be, or whatever, the millimeters, I don't know all that stuff. You know what I'm talking about. What they call them, all them things that you take to home movies and stuff with. Huh? I guess I got a super ace all that. I got to learn the weapons. You got to be armed with all of that. But we also got to arm ourselves with weapons. I thought you were the Nation of Islam. The Nation of Islam, well, I'd love to be with the Nation of Islam. But the Nation of Islam at this point apparently has no place for me and has pushed me out and has now put me off limits. I can't attend any mosque anywhere in the Nation of Islam. I'm not going to sit down in a corner and cry. I'm going to stand up and fight this peckerwood, fight this bastard as best I can. And I believe we must arm ourselves or harm ourselves. If we were all armed, we'd have a better community. there will be less rape in the black community. Ain't no damn fool going to run up on a bunch of women knowing all of them packing. Any kind of heat in your pants behind your zipper is going to get awfully cold when sister pull out a 9mm. Huh? Be less rape in the black community if all were armed. Our elders would be way able to walk the streets and go cash their little checks. If you knew that Uncle Bubba, Aunt Chili Red, Big Mama, that Big Mama and Uncle Naps, huh? Cutting Alma Jean. Don't be acting like you out here in Queens and you ain't got nobody in your family with them names. Because you left the cornbread crumbs a trail on your way coming in here. Look, don't you know with nobody or very few would rob Big Mama or cutting Alma Jean, trying to go cash her little check if they knew that they had a piece, if they knew they had their gat with them? Huh? Don't you know that Malcolm would probably still be alive that Sunday, February 21st, 1965, if fools walked into that auditorium and knew that everybody in the auditorium was armed to the teeth? You don't walk in to take out the people's hero, and you know everybody in the damn audience is armed. Even the little old lady dipping snuff in the audience got her pistol in her purse. The hell you gonna shoot Malcolm and make it out of the damn door? Queen Mother Moore tells the story of the days when she was with the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey. And they were at the ILA, the International Longshoremen's Association Hall in New Orleans, Louisiana. And they were trying to deport Mr. Garvey from the country. And they had told, the chief of police had told Mr. Garvey, had sent a decree out in an order that if Marcus Garvey spoke at the Longshoremen's Hall, he said, I'm going to run you in. I'm going to arrest you. And so Mr. Garvey showed up, and the members of UNIA showed up, and Queen Mother Moore and all the young girls were there. And you know Queen Mother could tell the story when she was telling the story. She's saying, honey, you know how she tell it, honey. She say the chief of police rolled up with police everywhere. And Mr. Garvey was there, ready to speak, and the chief of police stuck his finger in the air, and he said, if you say a word, Garvey, I'll run you in. And Queen Mother Moore saying, honey, we all stood up on the chairs. She said, we reached under our dresses, and we reached in our bras, and we reached them. She said, Colt 45s and Smith and Wessons, and everything went in the air. And she said, all you could hear was a choir or a chorus from the people saying, speak, Garvey, speak. And Mr. Garvey said it as I was saying. Garvey said it as I was saying. Some of you are foolish enough to say, well, no, what we need is books. Yes, we need books. We must study. We must study from our scholars. We must study from Dr. Ben. We must study from Dr. Clark. We must study from Dr. Maulana Karenga. We must study from Dr. Ivan Van Sertima, Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop, Dr. George G.M. James, Dr. Jeffries, and Dr. Jeffries, and on and on. We must study all of them. But at the same time, we can't say, I ain't going to study war no more. You can't say that. You say, well, we don't need guns. We need books. Shut up, fool. The white man make all the guns. How are we going to go up against the white man? We can't compete with the white man with all the guns. Well, fool, he make all the books. How you going to compete with him if he makes all the books? You willing to go that route? I was talking to a young Sunni Muslim brother at Mart 125 yesterday. He said, well, do you really think we still oppressed? In America, I'm not lying, as God is my witness. Young brother, but he has a good chance, this young brother. He said, you think we still oppressed? And he went on to show me how things had changed and how we weren't oppressed anymore. He really believed that. And I told him, since I knew he was coming from Islam, I told him that Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, that Prophet Muhammad said, you must stop the oppressor. Stop the hand of the oppressor. Physically stop him. The Holy Quran says, and fight. Fight with those who fight against you. That persecution and bloodshed, that persecution and the murder of your people is worse than bloodshed. The Quran says it's better to go on and fight and shed some blood, but persecution and the shedding of blood and the slaughter of your people, it's not worse than dealing with your enemy and shedding your enemy's blood. Fight. Fight with those who fight against you. It says, and drive them out from where they drove you out. It says, and fight with them until there is no more war. Fight with them until there is no more bloodshed. I told him that Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam says, stop the hand of the oppressor. Physically, fight him. But Prophet Muhammad goes on to say, if you can't fight him physically and stop his hand physically, speak out against him. Strongly speak out against him. And if you can't stop him physically and stop the hand of the oppressor physically, if you can't speak out boldly and strongly against him, Prophet Muhammad says, then secretly protest in your heart. But secret protest in your heart is the poorest and the weakest form of protest, he said. He said, oh, see, I put his man on him. That's the way we got to be. We got to know all of the doctrines, all of the philosophy, all of the ideology, so we can go after our people and bridge the gap and pull them together and form an African United Front or a Black United Front. But we got to know what they know and then some. So when I put Prophet Muhammad on him and told him that, you know, if you want to secretly protest in your heart, the Nabi or the Prophet said, that's the poorest form of protest. Then he's ready to talk. So the day he saw me, I was over there. He was very excited. He wanted another conversation. So I drop a little something else on him, and he's a good little brother coming along. I'm almost there, if you'll give me just a few more minutes. There would be less police brutality if the masses were armed. Mark Furman's would be hard to find. Mark Furman was not an exception to the rule. Mark Furman talked about the brotherhood of policemen, the fraternity of policemen. He said that the policeman is God. That's what he said. He's the devil saying that the policeman is God. He's judge, jury, and executor. Huh? Right on the spot. He talked about how he used to beat black men and women and Chicano brothers and sisters until he would just beat the waste out of them, beat the mess out of them. He said, and then you could smell the niggas and the, you could smell the niggas the Mexicans or the Chicano. You could smell them. I mean, you could smell them stinking. He said you couldn't get into the jail for the stench coming from them. They just beat them until they urinate on themselves, beat them until their bowels would waste all over. He said he'd grab them and just throw them down the steps, just throw them down. And another cracker down at the other end of the steps or catch them at the other end of the step, kick them and beat them. No, you got to, I'm here to tell you that the only way you're going to stop police brutality is you got to stand up and be brutal with this damn beast. You got to step to this cracker or it will never stop. You can moan, you can groan, you can sing, you can pray. You can recite, you can claim you know all the Quran, Old Testament. All the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament, the Quran from Al-Fatiha to Al-Nas. You can know all the Medunetah. You can know Maya, truth, justice, righteousness, harmony, balance, order, reciprocity. You can name those of the Netter system. You can go and study the Odu text and substantiate your position according to Odu. You can study the Ifa or the Word or the Akan or the Yoruba and run through the pantheon of the Orisha. You can call on Oludumare.
You can call on Ilegba and Shango and Obatula and Oshun and Ogun and Yemonya. You can know all of that. But unless you're willing to stand up and step to this white man, we will never get out of this condition. Frederick Douglass said the limits of a tyrant is prescribed by exactly how far you will let that tyrant go. He won't stop if you don't stop him. It's like any bully. The bully will keep picking on you until you get him to raise up off of you. But some of us will lose our lives. Tupac is gone already. Biggie is gone already. Many of us, Yusuf Hawkins is gone already. Many of us are already dead, and we're dying every day. And while we're here in Queens tonight, black men and women and young black boys are dying at the hands of some cracker somewhere in America right now. I would rather die for a cause than to die because you in some barroom pinching somebody's wife on the booty on the bar stool and get your throat cut with a Miller Lite bottle. It's a hell of a life, man. That's a hell of a way to go. Say your daddy got killed. Say, yeah. How'd he get killed? Say he pinched somebody's wife on the booty at the bar stool. The dude picked up a Miller Lite bottle of Budweiser Light. And broke it and cut his throat. Is that the way he died? Well, he died in the East Coast, West Coast fight. East Coast, West Coast. You a damn fool. You'll die over some bullshit? Some damn records? A damn CD? You are what you call a recording studio gangster? Oh, you bad as hell in the recording studio. There ain't a nigga in the world badder than you. Capone couldn't mess with you. Babyface Nelson, none of them couldn't mess with you.
My subject tonight is No More Negro Stuff.
That's right.
Revolution.
That's right.
Is the solution.
That's right.
No more Negro Stuff.
That's right.
Or we should say in Ebonic, enough Negro Stuff. What is it? Enough Negro Stuff. Revolution is the solution. And what is revolution? The Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that revolution is complete constructive change. What is revolution? Complete constructive change. He teaches us that revolution is, again, complete constructive change. You start at one point, and you must go, it is said, 360 degrees. The Bible puts it this way, as it was in the beginning, so shall it be in the end. And in the beginning you ruled, black man. In the beginning you ruled, black woman. So in order for a revolution to take place, complete constructive change, you must be placed back at the pinnacle of rulership, back at the pinnacle of civilization. Again, as it was in the beginning, so shall it be in the end. Malcolm told us, Minister Malcolm X, the Hajj Malik El-Shabazz, Brother Omar Wiley, as he was the national spokesman of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Minister Malcolm X said, a revolution is bloody. A revolution is what?
Bloody.
A revolution is bloody. Malcolm said a revolution knows no compromise. A revolution uproots and overturns everything that gets in its path. He said, why, if you knew what a revolution was, some of you would get back in the alley. He said, why, if you knew what a revolution was, some of you, well, you wouldn't even use that word, Malcolm said, in your vocabulary. And he repeats, he said, a revolution is bloody. Oh, yes, it is, he said. There can be no revolution unless there is bloodshed. There must be bloodshed in order to change the economic system. There must be bloodshed in order to change the political system. There must be bloodshed in order to change the academic and educational system. There must be bloodshed in order to change the religious systems of the world and the religious order that is in place today. There must be bloodshed. Every one of you under the sound of my voice went through a period where mother had to experience bloodshed. When we look at it, our head was at the top inside of mother's womb. Is that right? And our feet were at the bottom. But before we could come to birth, a revolution had to take place. And the baby had to go through this revolution, a turn in the womb of mother, so that the head moved to the mouth of the womb and the feet turned upward away from the mouth of the womb. And once the revolution took place, and once there was bloodshed, then the baby's head could do what is called crown. But the baby's head cannot crown unless a revolution takes place. And you, black man and woman, cannot wear the crown of freedom, justice, and equality. You cannot wear the crown of liberation unless a revolution takes place. And unless there is some bloodshed. Once the baby's head crowns, then at a point, at a stage, the baby is able to forge its way into the manifest light of the sun. But a revolution must take place. Again, revolution is complete destruction. Everybody say it. Don't be afraid of to say it. A revolution is what?
Complete destruction.
Now, that was almost everybody. Now, let me hear everybody this time. A revolution is
complete.
Some of you sitting there looking at me like an old Nile law. You scared to even say the word revolution. Your wig is crooked. Your weave is in your eye. Your Jerry curl is dripping on the table behind you. You're afraid to say that revolution means complete constructive change. You want to change in Harlem. You want to change in Brooklyn, in the Bronx. You want to change in New Jersey, in Philly, in Los Angeles, in Alabama, in Mississippi, in Nigeria, in Ghana, in South Africa, in the Congo. But before a change can take place in the world, a change must take place in you and in me, black man and black woman. There can be no change in the world until a change takes place in us. You can't be the same old Negro expecting the world to change. Some of you have been to every forum in Harlem, every forum in Brooklyn, every forum in New York City. You've been to every forum. You have every tape in your library. As many of you have every book and some books that some of the others may not have even heard of. And though you have all of this, we are yet in the same condition. Many of you have not made a commitment. You just come. You just like to be entertained. You just like to leave saying so-and-so sure did rap. Did you hear how he laid it down? Did you read such and such a book? Do you have such and such a tape? You should come to my house and see my wall. I got everything on the wall, but I ain't got a goddamn thing on the wall. This is the condition of the so-called American Negro. the so-called American Negro in the 21st century is a new kind of Negro. He's a Negro and she's a Negro that wears kente cloth. He's a new Negro and she's a new Negro that will wear mud cloth, that will wear cowrie shells, that will celebrate Kwanzaa, that will quote everybody that you can quote. Malcolm said, Fanon said, Garvey said, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, but a new Negro is a Negro that looks for every excuse to integrate with the white man under the sun. You want to march with them. You want to do what they call picnic with them when you don't even know what picnicking really means. You want to learn how to be a socialist with them, how to be a communist with them, how to be a Muslim with them, how to join the faggot federation with them, and be sissies with them, and be queers with them, and be lesbians with them. You want a brotherhood and a sisterhood and an otherhood with white folks any way you can. So many of us have not joined any organization. You're just the event junkies who just come out. And then when it's time to vote, even though you got on all your mud cloth, all of your kente cloth, all of your African clothes, you will see many of you in line voting for Gore, voting for Bush, in line. Enough Negro stuff. Revolution is the only solution. You were voting for Gore. Some of you Negroes were really hurt that Gore didn't win. Negroes crying crocodile tears, snotting and boogers everywhere, because Gore didn't win. Talking stupid talk. Bush stole the election. He stole the election. Nigga, that should tell you that for a long time the white man wouldn't even let you vote. Now the cracker lets you vote but won't even count your damn vote. But you still want to be the white man's nigga in the 21st century. Enough Negro stuff. Revolution is the only solution. You need a revolution of your mind. You need a revolution of your heart. You need a revolution of your spirit. And a Negro that can claim to be black can be claimed to be African and get in line and vote. One of two crackers is out of their mind. One devil is better than another devil. One Satan is better than another Satan. One Lucifer is better than another Lucifer. There's no difference, Malcolm said. And we paraphrase him and bring him right on down to the modern time. There's no difference in Gore and Bush. No difference in the Democratic devil and the Republican devil. They're both devils. Malcolm said there's no difference in the Democrat and the Dixiecrat. There's no difference in the Southern white man and the Northern white man. Except in the South, they'll shoot you 13 times, and in the North, they'll shoot you 41 times. The only difference in the Northern cracker and the Southern cracker is that the Northern cracker speaks with a Northern accent and the Southern cracker speaks with a Southern drawl. But a cracker is a cracker is a cracker is a cracker. Enough Negro stuff. Revolution is the only solution. You need, we need complete constructive change. Negro intellectuals don't want to move the way Dr. J is moving. Negro intellectuals don't want to move the way Dr. Maulana Karanga is moving. Negro intellectuals don't want to move the way Dr. Malefi Asante is moving, or Dr. Wade Noble, or Dr. Patricia Newton, or Dr. Francis Tress Welsing. Negro intellectuals still in the hip pocket of the white man. Right. We need a complete constructive, what?
Change.
A complete constructive change. Revolution is the only solution. You must arm yourself. Some of you ready to run out of here now. It's too radical for black people to have guns. But when the white man has the National White Rifle Association, nobody calls that radical. But when black people talk about getting guns, that's radical. It's just a club when white folks have guns. It's called a rifle club. It's called a rifle association.
Teach, brother, teach.
Huh? And some of you got guns. But you got guns for black. You hate black. Oh, yes, you do. You get into an argument, you say, nigga, I'll kill you. Nigga, I'll blow your brains out. Nigga, I'll pour hot water on you. Nigga, I'll dump starch on you. Nigga, I'll pour hot pinto beans on you, nigga. But when the white man comes, you can hear a rat pee on cotton. Negro won't say a word. Your gun won't shoot when the white man comes. But you'll shoot each other. You're a big rapper gangster. You'll kill big and small. You'll risk your own life to get in to blow him away. You'll kill Tupac Shakur on one of the busiest thoroughfares in the world, in Las Vegas, Nevada, where there are lights everywhere and cameras everywhere. You will risk sliding up to the car to kill your brother, Tupac Shakur, because you claim you're a gangster, but you don't kill four crackers who shot down brother Amadou Diallo 41 times. Whether I'm suggesting it or not, it's still something that we think about. And if we're not thinking about, it's something that we should at least dream about, if nothing else. No more. Enough. Negro stuff. It's revolution. And revolution is the only solution. Before it's over, you're going to have to fight this crap. Negroes from the Congressional Black Caucus voting against Sister Asada Shakur. You even got an old Negro on the Congressional Black Caucus, a Negro named Bobby Rush from Illinois, who used to be a member of the original Black Panther Party. Here's a Negro that used to be a Black Panther, a member of the Congressional Black Caucus. But when House Resolution 254 came on the floor, Bobby Rush, former Black Panther, wouldn't vote for Sister Asada Shakur against the no-good bitch in New Jersey. That's what I call her. The no-good bitch in New Jersey, Christine Whitman. The last time I said that at the memorial of Brother Kwame Ture, do you know I had a group of sisters to come to me and say to me, you should never call any woman a bitch. And they argued with me all evening over calling Christine Whitman a bitch. I didn't call a woman a bitch. I called a dog a dog. I called a bitch a bitch. And if you're a rapper, if you want to call somebody a bitch, then you should call the real bitch a bitch in your rap lyrics and stop calling the black woman out of her name. But you don't have the heart as a rapper to call the white woman a bitch. You don't have the heart as a rapper to call the white woman a hoe. You don't have the heart to talk about blowing the white man's brains out. But you got the heart to talk about it in all of your lyrics when you're talking about yourself. When you're talking about your own people. Enough Negro stuff. Revolution is the only solution. Revolution is the solution. And revolution is complete constructive change. You ain't got no revolution if you have change. You just have change. You worried now that Jesse got caught. Some Negroes running around crying. It's not even anything we're going to spend a lot of time on. But here's a Negro that when I was doing battle for our people, crushing crackers everywhere, this is a Negro that called the white folks up. He was on just about every television network. He was in just about every newspaper, condemning me for revolutionary talk and action. and black power ideology against white folks. But now that same Negro sneaking and creeping, that same Negro, now we understand why he defended Clinton against Monica Lewinsky so hard. He's right there in the White House with his woman, not his wife, understanding Clinton and Lewinsky because he had Karen at his side while he's at the White House and left Jackie alone at home. No good, nigga. But these are the boot-licking Negroes that you look up to.
That's right.
Slick-headed Negro running around dripping Jerry Curl all over the street, compromising with the Ku Klux Klan, compromising with the white police department, compromising with Gore and Clinton, and just becoming a Gore whore. This is a shame. Revolution is the solution. When you look at the universe, brothers and sisters, it is light, light in the universe that leaves the sun and strikes the planets at their imaginary equator, causing them to spin, as with planet Earth, at the terrific speed of 1,037 and a third miles per hour. It is light striking the planet with its rays of energy that causes the planets to move. Again, spin and rotate. We can't have a revolution unless we have light. We can't have a revolution unless we study. But evolvement comes through involvement. You can't just read and make no commitment. You can't just watch a tape and make no commitment. You can't just listen to a tape and make no commitment. You can't just come here and make no commitment. You can't just show up in court for support and make no further commitment. You can't just march and make no commitment. This is Harlem, New York. We should have a mass black power movement right now in Harlem, New York that would create waves all over the planet Earth. Where is that mass black movement? We are scattered, some here, some there, and some over there, instead of a mass black movement. Who come out of the gangster disciples? We have brothers and sisters from the colleges and universities. We have brothers and sisters from the grassroots, from the community. The building of a black united front. I'm here tonight to say again, enough Negro stuff. Complete constructive change is the only solution. And I want to take this opportunity before I close to go over with you, thank you, the new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense 10-point program and platform. How many would allow me to share that with you? Let me see if the man. We can't read this unless we give credit where credit is due. There would be no 10-point program and platform if there were no Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey. There would be no 10-point program if there were no Honorable Elijah Muhammad. If there would be no 10-point program and platform if there were no Bobby Seale and Huey P. Newton. The original Black Panther Party 10-point platform and program came from the aims and objectives of Marcus Mosiah Garvey. The original 10-point program and platform of the Black Panther Party came from what the Muslims want and what the Muslims believe from the most honorable Elijah Muhammad. And so Bobby and Huey sat down and framed the 10-point program and platform, standing on Garvey's shoulders, standing on Elijah's shoulders. And so today, in the 21st century, we have reached back to all of them, and we have created a 21st century document, the new Black Panther Party 10-point program and platform. What the new Black Panthers want, what the new Black Panthers believe. Number one, we want freedom. We want the power to practice self-determination and to determine the destiny of our community and the Black nation. We believe in the spiritual high moral code of our ancestors called Maya Inclusosapa, and we believe that Black people will not be free until we are able to determine our divine destiny. Maya, truth, justice, righteousness, harmony, balance, order, and reciprocity. Inclusosapa, what is it? So let's do them in Kiswahili. That's good. The first one is? What is it? Umoja. The second one is?
Kujichagulia.
The third one is? Ujima. Ujima. The next? Ujima. We have. It's pronounced Ujima. And what's the next one? Nia, Kuumba, and Imani. Unity, self-determination, collective work and responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith. The new Black Panther Party is based on Garvey and Elijah, Huey and Bobby, based on Mayotte, and based on what? The Inclusosapa. We believe that our base should not be in Karl Marx. Our base should not be in any Marxist-Leninist ideology. We believe that our base must not be from someone's little red book, but as Dr. J said, it must be, paraphrasing him, based on our own little black book. Point number two. We want full employment for our people, and we demand the dignity to do for ourselves what we have begged the white man to do for us. We believe that since the white man has kept us deaf, dumb, and blind, and used every dirty trick as COINTELPRO in the book and others to stand in the way of our freedom and independence, that we should be gainfully employed until such time that we can employ and provide for ourselves. We believe further in power in the hands of the people, wealth in the hands of the people, and arms in the hands of the people. Point number three, we want tax exemption and an end to the robbery of the black nation by the capitalists. We want an end to the capitalistic domination of Africa in all of its forms, imperialism, criminal settler colonialism, neocolonialism, racism, sexism, Zionism, apartheid, and artificial borders. We believe that the wicked racist government, this wicked racist government, has robbed us, and now we are demanding the overdue debt of reparations. A form of reparations was promised 100 years ago, 40 acres and a mule, as restitution for the continued genocide of our people and to, in meaningful measure, repair the damage from the African Holocaust. And we use two Swahili terms, Maafa, which means death or disaster, but it's not being strong enough for us. We register the use of Maafa, but we go deeper into Kiswahili to use the term for the African Holocaust. And that term we use is Maanga Miso. What is it?
Maanga Miso.
What is it?
Maanga Miso.
And Maanga Miso doesn't let the white man off the hook. Maafa means death. Maafa means a disaster.
It could be any kind of disaster. It could be any form of death. But when you say Maangamizo in Swahili, you are saying that someone intentionally, willfully, with premeditation and forethought, that their very nature was involved in the murder and the destruction, the complete destruction of another people. So again, we use Mayapa and we use, what's the other one?
Mayangamizo.
What is it?
Mayangamizo.
Mayangamizo. We believe our people should be exempt from all taxation. Everybody ready for that one?
Oh, yeah.
As long as we are deprived of equal justice under the laws of the land and the overdue reparations debt remains unpaid, we will accept payment in fertile and minerally rich land, precious metals, industry, commerce, and currency. As genocide crimes continue, people's tribunals must be set up to prosecute and to execute. But we don't just want gold for reparations. We don't just want what? We don't just want what? We don't just want silver. We don't want just precious metals. We don't just want some currency, some Benjamins, some paper, some cheese, some cheddar. I know they say cheddar always makes it better. But we don't want to just get some money from the white man. And we don't just want land. Some say land, but settle the debt. Give us the land, give us the money, give us the precious metals, give us the commerce, give us the industry, give it all. But before it's all over, in order for us to be able to repair the debt, there must be an eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth, a limb for a limb, and a goddamn life for a life. Reparations means that there must be some blood of our enemies spilled.
Yes,
we must have blood paid.
Yes,
Dr. John Henry Clark said that South Africa was taken from us in blood and can only truly be returned to us in blood. The white man's blood must bathe the earth. That's revolution. You thinking you're going to walk in and close a shower curtain? Pull a lever, or puncture or break the chair, or some other foolish, and get free. Not only must we have all of this for reparations, but there must be the spilling of the white man, the shedding of the white man's blood. How many agree with that? I'm here to tell you that there's medicine. We're talking about reparations. Reparations means to what? Repair the damage. What does it mean?
Repair the damage.
There must be healing in reparations. Is that right?
Yes.
That is just compensation and restitution. So I'm here to tell you that there is medicine in the murder, and there's healing in the killing. There's healing in the killing, and there's medicine in the murder. When this black man is turned loose, when this black man and black woman's mind is free, and when this black man and black woman, even if it's through our babies or our baby's baby's babies, if we are too afraid to do it today, when that's set loose on the white man, when that's set loose, brothers and sisters, we're talking about a real revolution. We're talking about uprooting and overturning everything that gets in our path. We're talking about killing until we're satisfied. Killing until we're whole. Some of you don't want that kind of lecture. You want somebody up talking pretty. All kinds of metaphors and quotations and singing a little song in the middle and having a little hymn and strike up the organ and strike up the band and play the piano. Hell, if poetry could get us free, we would have been free a long time ago. But we must have more revolutionary poets who will pour revolutionary poetry into the minds and hearts of our people. Rap, revolutionary rap. All of this must be in the minds and hearts of our people.
That's right.
Revolution is the solution. Complete, constructive change. The so-called Jews were given reparations. The Japanese were given reparations. The black, the red, and the brown nations must be given reparations. The American white man owes us reparations. Is that true?
Yes, sir.
England owes us reparations.
Yes,
France owes us reparations.
Yes,
Belgium owes us.
Yes,
Europe at all owes us reparations. The Arabs owe us reparations. The so-called Jews owe us reparations. All who have taken part in the African Holocaust and the slaughter of 600 million of our people over the past 6,000 years in general and 400 years in specific, we feel that this is a reasonable and just demand that we make at this time in history. How many believe it is an unreasonable demand? Let's talk about it a minute. Is there anyone who believes it's an unreasonable demand? Point number four, we want decent housing, fit for shelter of human beings, free health care, preventive and maintenance. We want an end to the trafficking of drugs and to the biological and chemical warfare targeted at our people. We believe that since the white landlords will not give decent housing and quality health care to the black community, then the housing, the land, the social, political, and economic institutions should be made into independent Ujamaa New African communal cooperatives so that our community with government, reparations, and aid until we can do for ourselves can build and make drug-free, decent housing with health facilities for its people. How many agree with that? Let me see your hands.
That's right.
Point number five of the New Black Panther Party for Self-Defense 10-point platform and program. We want education for our people that exposes the true nature of this devilish and decadent American society.
That's right.
We want education that teaches us our true history and history.
That's right.
And our role in the present-day society. We believe in an educational system that will give to our people a knowledge of self. If we do not have knowledge of self and our position in society and the world, then we have little chance to properly relate to anything else. How many agree with that? Let me see your hand. Point number six, we want all black men and black women to be exempt from military service. How many agree with that? We believe that black people should not be forced to fight in the military service to defend a racist government that holds us captive and does not protect us. We will not fight and kill other people of color in the world who, like black people, are being victimized by the white racist government of America. We will protect ourselves from the force and violence of the racist police and the racist military by any means necessary. How many agree with that? Let me see your hand. Point number seven, we want an immediate end to police harassment. How many agree? Police brutality, how many agree? And the murder of black people, how many agree? We want an end to black-on-black violence. How many agree? Snitching. How many agree? Crime coming with the oppressor. How many agree? There must come a time when we kill every goddamn snitch up here in the land. And that time should be now. That's what they're telling me on the streets. I'm just quoting it.
Thank you.
It goes on to say, we believe that we can end police brutality in our community by organizing black self-defense groups, black people's militias, black liberation army that are dedicated to defending our black community from racist, fascist, police, military oppression, and brutality. How many agree? The Second Amendment of White America's Constitution. The Second Amendment of what?
White America's Constitution.
Whose Constitution?
White America's.
Whose?
White America's.
Some of you don't want to say that.
It's white
America's Constitution. It's a racist, sexist document.
That's right.
It was never intended for you. Never intended for me. The Second Amendment of White America's Constitution.
That's right.
Gives the right to bear arms. We furthermore therefore believe that all black people, how many?
All
black people should unite and form an African United Front.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
And arm themselves for self-defense.
Yes, sir.
How many agree?
Right. Oh, yeah.
How many scared to raise your hand? Point number 8. We want an immediate end to the death penalty. We want what?
End to the death penalty.
And we want freedom for all black men and black women held in international, military, federal, state, county, city, jails, and prisons. How many agree?
Yeah.
We believe that black people and people of color should be released from the many jails and prisons because they have not received a fair and impartial trial. And America is not qualified to judge. Point number 9. We want all black people when brought to trial to be tried in a court by a jury of their peer group. How many agree?
Yes.
Or people from their black community as defined by white law of the Constitution of the United States. We believe that the courts should follow their own law if their nature will allow, as stated in their Constitution of the United States, so that black people will receive fair trials. The 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution gives a man or a woman a right to be tried by a peer group. A peer is a person from a similar economic, social, religious, geographical, environmental, historical, and racial background. To do this, the court will be forced to select a jury from the black community from which the black defendant came. We have been and are being tried by all white juries or people of color with white minds on those juries that have no understanding of the average reasoning person of the black community. Point number 10. You ready for that one?
Yes.
Point number 10. We want land, bread, housing, education, clothing, justice, and peace. How many for that? We want land, bread, housing, education, clothing, justice, and peace. And as a political objective, we want national liberation in a separate state or territory of our own, here or elsewhere. How many want that? Some of y'all scared to raise your hand here. You scared he might ship us out to sea? You scared that Peckerwood might walk in here right now and say, all right, niggas. All you niggas sitting there with all that African stuff on, listening to that shiny bald-headed nigga up there. All right, nigga, just give me back everything and hit him along to me, nigga. Everything. Give me my clothes, nigga. Here we are sitting in here looking at each other buck-naked. Sitting here buck-naked. They give me the shoes, nigga. We sitting here buck-naked, barefoot, looking at each other. Give me the microphone, nigga. And the microphone jumps right out of my hand. Give me my tables, nigga. Give me my chairs, nigga. Now we all standing up, butt naked, barefoot. No microphone. Give me the lights, nigga. These are my lights. Here we all standing up, butt naked, barefooted. No mic. no chair, no table, in the dark. It's all right, nigga. Give me the grease out of your head, nigga. Here we are, standing here, and lost the grease from our head. All right, nigga, give me my digit. Are you fine? You saw me coming in there. Yeah, you got your damn teeth. He said, nigga, give me the building. Here we are now. Stand it up. Butt naked, no shoes, no chair, no table, no mic, no light. The floor right out from under us. The building right out from behind us. They're all around us, and here we are, outdoors, butt naked, indoors. He said, all right, nigga, give me back. You talking all that talk. All right, buddy. Give me back, nigga. Give me back everything that belongs to me. Nigga, I've taken over Harlem. Nigga, get off the ground, nigga. Here we are, jumping up and down, outdoors, in the dark, butt-naked, barefoot, no place to sit, no table, no light, no mic, no building, no floor. He said, all right, nigga, you still, you crazy nigga, you dedicated nigga. You jumping up and down, butt naked and barefoot. I took the mic from you, nigga. I took everything from you, nigga. But you still listen to that nigga. All right, nigga, give me my language back. Now the nigga standing up in front of you can't even talk to you no more. Here you are thinking, all right, nigga, you thinking in English. Give me back my thoughts out of your head. Here you are, blank-headed nigga, can't listen no more. Buck naked, barefooted, in the dark, no building, no floor, no chair, no table, cold as hell. And the crackers say, all right, nigga, I got air rights.
Stop breathing.
I got air rights. You niggas can't breathe my ass.
That's what I said. Stop breathing.
You niggas can't be in my ass space. Brothers and sisters, we need a separate state or territory of our own.
Yes, sir.
Yes, we can buy land,
yes,
and we must buy land,
yes,
so that we can practice nation building.
Yes, sir.
Buy land,
right,
so we can practice nation building. But when we buy land, understand that the deed that we have in our hand that we got from the white man, if you read in the fine print at the bottom, it says the United States government maintains the right of eminent domain, which means that the property costs $100,000. But you wanted to make sure you owned it. You gave the cracker $200,000 just to make sure you owned it. But it says at the bottom of the deed, the United States government maintains the right of eminent domain. So you pay all of them high real estate taxes, and the white man come in, even though the property only, the land only cost $100,000, you pay $200,000 for it. The cracker can still take it, can he?
Yes,
can he still take it?
Yes.
What about the popular vote and the electoral college vote? Did George Bush win the popular vote?
No, sir.
Did not.
Who won the popular vote?
The people.
Gore, right?
Gore did.
Gore won the popular vote. But even though Gore won the popular vote, Bush won the what? Electoral College vote. Hey, I'm not into that. You take your Electoral College. You take your goddamn popular vote. We in the New Black Panther Party believe that the vote should be a revolutionary weapon. That the vote should be a cock hammer. And we only use it on certain issues at certain times for certain candidates. But stop being the white man's nigga, getting in line to vote every time there's a damn election. It should be a revolutionary
weapon.
Based on the cock-hammer principle. Let me read on. We want land, bread, housing, education, clothing, justice, and peace. And as our political objective, we want national liberation in a separate state or territory of our own, here or elsewhere, a liberated zone, New Africa or Africa, and a plebiscite, a what?
A plebiscite.
A vote, a what?
A vote,
a plebiscite to be held throughout the black nation in which only we will be allowed to participate for the purposes of determining our will and divine destiny as a people. Free the land of you mighty nation, you can accomplish what you will, black power. We believe that the black man must focus on all of these 10 points and this program, this platform. And we close with these words. We believe that the white man has proven to be absolutely disagreeable to get along with in peace. How many disagree with that? That the white man has proven to be absolutely disagreeable to get along with in peace. No one has been able to get along with the white man. All the peoples of color have been subjected to the white man's wrath. We believe that his very nature will not allow him to practice true sharing, fairness, equity, and justice. Therefore, to the red man and woman, to the yellow, and to the brown, we say to you, the same rabbit dog that bit you, bit us too. Black power, all power to the people.
Let me talk about some of the points and then we'll open up for the question and answer period. You say Khalid Muhammad has no program. You say Khalid Muhammad has no platform. That is the 10-point program and platform of the new Black Panther Party for self-defense. It flowed from my heart as I studied Huey and Bobby, as I studied the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, as I studied the aims and objectives of the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey. That's the 10-point program and platform. That's the ideology. That's the doctrine. That's the philosophy. You say, why did you want to restart the new Black Panther Party? Why did you want to start the Panther Party all over again? Because I believe there's a need for the Black Panther Party. What is your position on the original? I see Brother Petmos is here. Let's all stand. Please give him a strong black
ear. I remember my esteemed elders and hard workers along with Brother Herman's service and in the community.
Yes.
Brother Petmos.
On the original Black Panther Party. Or some of you call them the old Black Panther Party. We don't refer to them as the old Black Panther Party. We refer to them as the original Black Panther Party. We stand on the shoulders of the original Black Panther Party. What is your position on them? We love them. We can't get caught up in the madness of the entanglement of the disputes that existed at that time. Whether we're out of the Huey School, the Bobby School, the Elrich School, the Elaine Brown School, the this school or that school or another school. We can't get involved in that. We honor them for the rich legacy that they left. But the new Black Panther Party must be based on Afrocentricity. The new Black Panther Party must have Africa at the core, Africa at the center of whatever we do. The new Black Panther Party must have African spiritualism. We must believe in the God of our forefathers and the God of our foremothers. We cannot have a revolutionary Pan-African Black nationalist movement and not believe in God, not believe in the God of our ancestors,
that's right,
not believe in African spiritualism.
That's right.
So the new Black Panther Party has African spiritualism and the African God concept,
that's right,
at its very core, at its very center.
That's right.
Are you with me?
Yes, sir.
We are revolutionary Pan-African nationalists.
Yes, sir.
He said, well, how are you going to be both? How in the hell are you going to exist and don't be both?
That's right.
You can't be one and not be the other if you're going to have complete constructive change. If you're going to have, excuse me, a revolution, you must be both. We are revolutionary Pan-African Black nationalists. We believe in the total unification and liberation of Africa and all African people wherever we are on the face of the planet Earth. We are revolutionary Pan-Africanists. But we are also Black nationalists because we want some of this land that we can call our home. some of this earth that we can call our own. And we believe that the first African that we must free is the African that's right here with us. That's the first African we got to free. It's this African that I'm looking at and the African that you're looking at. We got to free this African. But this African right here is in the most strategic place in the world. This African here is right here where the head of the snake is. And if this African will cut the head of the snake off, then the rest of the Africans around the world can breathe a lot freer than they are. Because once this African, us, cuts the head of the snake off, the red, white, and blue stars and stripes forever snake, the United States of America, when we cut that head off, it loosens its grip on Africa, the Caribbean, and the rest of the world. So we are the most strategically placed African in the world because the American white man is the number one enemy of the world. And we know this cracker better than anybody else knows it anywhere on the face of the planet. Am I lying to you? We must work on nationalism, our sense of nationhood. We must work on statehood, statecraft. All of these are terms that we must become familiar with in all of their nuances and differences. We are revolutionary Pan-African. Excuse me. Revolutionary Pan-African nationalists. Are there any questions on that? We are separatists. As our 10-point platform says, we believe in a separate state or territory of our own. We do not believe we are Americans. We do not believe that we have ever been Americans. And we do not believe that we ever will be Americans. I see Sister Yah Asantewaye Nzinga in our audience who is fighting to train and teach our babies in the public school system of New York. And the signs because she told our babies that they are not Americans, that they are Africans, that they are the original black people of the planet Earth, and a Negro, a fat Negro woman principle, and ain't your mama Grits head rag wearing woman fired her because some crackers at the school, some imposter white Jew who just crawled out of the caves and hills of Europe just a few days ago, wanted to teach the babies that they were thugs and hustlers and low down and no good and have them playing all kinds of roles and stuff. And she said, no, babies, you cannot do that. You come from a rich legacy, a rich history. You are not Americans. You are Africans, and you never will be Americans. Give her a strong black hand. Some of you have lost your mind. I'm a separatist. God damn it, let me say it again. You understand what I'm saying? I'm a separatist, fool. I'm saying straight up separatist. I'm a separatist is what I'm saying. I'm trying to speak everybody's language. I'm a separatist. I believe in separation and independence. I don't believe in crawling around, laying around, begging my enemy to give me, let me have, can you spare? I don't believe in going to my enemy, trying to borrow from my enemy's history on credit. Just don't believe it. Separation is the only solution for freedom and independence. Did America integrate with England?
No, sir.
Did America integrate with the British Empire?
No, sir.
Did the 13 colonies that started here integrate with King George in England?
No, sir.
They did what?
Separate.
They did what?
Separate.
Say it. They did what?
Separate.
God damn it, they separated from them. Separation. Now that 13 scrawny colonies is more powerful than the British Empire.
That's right.
They've grown into 50 powerful, wicked, evil states. Is that right?
That's right.
Separation. I'm a separatist.
We of the New Black Panther Party for self-defense, we make no apology that we are separatists. That's it. You want us to explain John Brown? One cracker from history. Modern day, you want us to explain Marilyn Buck? Is that her name? Huh? Marilyn Buck. One from today. We believe that we should get credit, whatever credit is due. If John Brown helped black people to kill some white folks before he got killed, then John Brown did some good. But that doesn't make John Brown good.
Right.
You can do good and not be good. A dope dealer can be killing babies all in the community by selling them dope. Is that right? But that same goddamn dope dealer might be giving turkeys out, might be giving bread, giving all kinds of food out to the community, might be paying some of the elders light bill, water bill, gas bill, utility bill, might have even bought a van to take them back and forth to the store. That means that that killer of our babies who is selling dope in the community is doing some good. Is that right? That's good, isn't it? The things I mentioned. But that doesn't make the drug dealer good. Because the drug dealer does some good. John Brown did good. But John Brown is not good. That doesn't stop John Brown from being the devil. He's a devil who rose up against his own. But we give him credit where credit is due. Marilyn Buck. They claim, they say, was responsible for helping in the escape of our great revolutionary sister, Hafsa Shakur. If Marilyn Buck indeed was responsible and worked and helped, then Marilyn Buck should receive what? Credit for the good that she has done. But she bears the weight of all of her people on her life.
That's right.
And it is only what she should do.
That's right.
And Patty Hearst and many others, when they had those flashes of guilt and doing some good, Jane Fonda, who was an equal opportunity whore.
That's right.
Everybody got some.
That's right.
In every movie. They all did some good. But that doesn't make me change my position on them.
Nope.
Because they do some good. Don't be confused.